I'll actually begin by saying this is Claire Coyne. I'm interviewing Diana Van Ruin on Thursday, the 23rd of October 2014 in Richmond. And now, Diana, if I could ask you to introduce yourself.
I'm Diana Van Ruin. What do you want me to say about this?
Well, sorry. Yes, that
you threw that
start,
one at me.
Because actually, I don't want you to say too much because we want to talk mainly about the temple visit. If you could let me know what year you were born and very briefly what your mother and father did during their adult lives and also what you yourself did while you were working. I can recap if you want me to.
No, so much. Okay. I'm Diana Van Ruin. I was born in December 1939, just after the start of the Second World War. My parents were Roy and Connie Herring, my maiden name. My father was a civil engineer. He worked for what was then a large construction company called Wilmot, and he was the chief estimator, and that is what basically led to my being shown the Temple of Mithras. My mother didn't go back to work until I was 14. I was an only child, so she stayed at home. And then she worked in the civil service until she retired. I went to London University and I met my future husband, who was South African. And after university, I went to South Africa in 1965. And I lived in South Africa for 28 years. And in that time, it was completely inappropriate for women to work because it was seen as socially inappropriate. So although I was already qualified, I stayed at home for 10 years, had four children in quick succession, four under five. And then in 1975, I went back to work. And the degree that I had done was a natural science degree. So I had a qualification in physics and chemistry. Hadn't worked for 10 years. So I fell back on that and I taught at the local high school. Never worked so hard in my life. Used to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning in order just to stay one lesson ahead. But it was interesting and I enjoyed it, and I worked there for a year, and then I joined the South African Bureau of Standards, which is like the British Standards Institute, and I worked in their water technology department for 10 years, during which time I decided I would do a higher degree within research psychology. So I then did an honours degree in research psychology, switched totally, and joined the Developmental Psychology Research Department at the University of South Africa, working with malnourished, doing research on causes of malnutrition that weren't directly related to the amount of nutrition taken, but due to socioeconomic factors, which is very interesting. And then in 1990, I moved down to Cape Town and had a job as a lecturer in developmental psychology at the University of Cape Town. When the last of my four children finished university, I came back to England in 1993. I then reverted, I was 53 then, so getting into the job market wasn't that easy. So I did some temping and I landed up in a company that basically made use of my chemistry background. And I stayed with them until I retired.
Fantastic, thank you. And I forgot to ask you whereabouts you were born.
I was born in East Molesey, near Hampton Court Palace. And I went to school in Hampton. I went to the Lady Eleanor Hollis School in Hampton.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to get straight to the Temple of Mithras experience now. And you mentioned a little bit about it, which I'm excited to hear more about. What would you say, though, is your overriding impression of your visit to the Temple of Mithras?
Well, I didn't know what to expect. I was 14 at the time. But I knew my father, who was very interested in archaeological finds and had had quite a lot of experience with it because they were doing a lot of the excavation work in the City of London after all the bombings. And he came home and said that they think they've made an important archaeological find. And he couldn't really talk about it because the site needed to be secured. But if he got an agreement, then he would take us up to see it. And so there was a high sense of expectation. But in my 14-year-old ignorance, I really didn't know what to expect. And so I had no idea how big it was going to be. I thought it might be some large temple like the Parthenon with columns soaring into the sky and all of this. And the great day came and we went up. And of course it was, there were three main things that stood out. One, it was below ground, not at all what I'd been expecting, because of course Roman London was so much deeper down at that time. It was muddy because that site had had a whole lot of industrial machinery going around, so it was muddy. It was sort of rocky with the various stones that had been uncovered. And to me, not having an expectation, it was small. I had expected something sort of much bigger and more impressive. However, it was pointed out to me that this was really, really important, and this was the front end of it, and this was the back end of it, and this is where the altar would have been. And we were in a privileged position because of my father's position as a civil engineer, basically the chief estimator, who had then had a lot to do with this site. We were then shown around by an archaeologist, and so he was able to basically just show us what we were looking at. But I don't remember in detail what was said at that time.
So you didn't have the queue thing then that a lot of people had?
No, it was fantastic. We were ushered in with loads, thousands of people all queuing around the outside. And we were feeling very privileged because it was me and my mother and my father and just a few other people at that time that were let in to see it. So that registered. Yeah.
Especially as a teenager, that's lovely.
Yes, yes, that was great. And my father, I still have a little terracotta oil lamp that my father found when he was going around with the archaeologist, and because of course they had to secure the site, so that people couldn't come in, word couldn't get round. It was so important, as I said, that the people working for the company didn't say anything in advance so that word got out, because of course they didn't want people trampling all over the site. And my father was walking around with the archaeologist and he saw this little piece of terracotta or a little piece of pottery sticking out from the mud and took it out and sort of brushed the mud off, and it was this very small little Roman terracotta oil lamp. And I was very excited and dutifully handed it to the archaeologist, my father being a scrupulous man. And the archaeologist said, "Oh, no, no, you can keep that. We've got hundreds of those." And my father was very thrilled, and I still have it today, but of no either great significance or value, but a nice thing to have because he actually found it. And he was there when he was there when they unearthed the various sculptures that were unearthed, and then of course he could talk about it at home, and he was very, very impressed that he had been able to actually hold this head of Mithras, and you know, this was a tremendous experience.
And seeing your father's excitement about this whole experience, how did that affect you and your relationship to history and archaeology?
Well, up until then, archaeology hadn't really been anything concrete in my mind. And then as I understood, despite my disappointment at the size of this temple, as I understood the significance of it, then it really opened my eyes to the interest. It was the first time that I could look at something and think, wow, I'm looking at something that's 2,000 years old. And it's real, it's here at my feet, you know, I can actually see it. And so really that, it's not so I then pursued a career in archaeology, but it did make looking at ancient sites so much more interesting for me. It was something I really hadn't thought about before and did afterwards.
And how much did your father talk about the meaning of Mithras specifically?
Well, that I didn't think he really did. Whether it because he didn't know, or he had the misfortune of being very deaf at a time when hearing aids were not very sophisticated, and so he it made him quite an introverted man, and so he wasn't really particularly communicative. And I think at that time, I was an only child, I was 14, quite a grumpy teenager at that time. And when he came home in the evening, he'd had the strain of listening to people all day, and he would tend to come home and just close down. And also their style of parenting really wasn't to talk about work that much. And so I would think that he probably did know, but he didn't impart that information. And I, foolishly, well, without the aid of the internet in those days, didn't actually pursue it further.
And how much were you aware what a big thing this had blown up to be in terms of the press response to the discoveries and the public's response?
Well, it became very clear once we went up to see. And also the very fact that my father talked about it immediately gave it significance. But when we saw, on the newsreel, you could see all these people with this tremendous interest. And then, with hindsight or in retrospect, having been there and seen it and then realized how important this was, then that memory has stayed with me. It made a big impression, because it was such an exciting thing. I realized that this sort of miracle of finding this temple of Mithras and below the foundations of this building that had been bombed. And so you had all that war damage. And London, we'd had the Festival of Britain in 1951, which was very joyful, but that was, which I remember, of course, but that was on the South Bank and specially constructed. But this was still in blackened City of London territory, with lots of bombed buildings and bomb sites still very much around, and it was quite grim going up to London in those days, because it was so soot damaged and so much that was broken and still not being cleared away. And then out of the bombing of that building, there had come really this miracle of discovering this temple. And from that point of view, it's not surprising at all that it really caught the public imagination, because here was something really exciting coming out of what had been something really bad. And of course, because there are so many fragments of Roman remains in London, but to find, I mean, that I do remember, I clearly remember my father saying, well, what is so amazing about this is that it's so, in a way, it's intact. The whole walls, the outside walls, sorry. And you haven't got just one end of a temple or part of a temple. You've actually got the whole layout of this temple. It was almost like a miracle that it should have been preserved like that, and that they then uncovered it without, as far as I'm aware, doing very much damage. Because, and I think, you know, my father was probably quite instrumental in that, because they had worked on so many bomb sites and they had uncovered various archaeological remains previously. He knew what he was looking at. And so the moment that they uncovered what looked to be something different, he was able to alert the authorities, and which presumably stopped there being much damage as a result of the excavation. And of course, all work on the site stopped, which I'm sure cost the company money, but anyway, they wouldn't have had any choice, while the archaeologists did all the necessary work. And but the thing is, when you understood what the temple was about, sort of in context, of course it then became a must see, because that was a really fantastic thing that had emerged out of you know, what had been a whole lot of bad news and still a whole lot of unsightliness in the city.
That was a really lovely description, actually, about that. It's almost like the phoenix rising. Suppose,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes.
So just going back to what you said at the beginning about, because you went with your father and because of his position, you were given a tour by an archaeologist. Was that a chap or a lady?
It was a man.
Can you remember much about him?
No.
You can't remember if he was wearing a suit or...
No, I can't remember. No, I'm not going to try and fabricate.
That's fine.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
It would be most likely that he was wearing a suit, because that's what people wore in those days.
Well, that's true. That wasn't a very helpful question, was it? Yeah, I mean, given your father's role, I'm presuming he would have been shown around by the lead archaeologist, who was Grimes, or he was,
yes,
Miss Grimes at the time, became Professor Grimes. Mm. So he used to wear a carnation, apparently.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well, I'm almost certain we went up on a Sunday morning, so maybe, you know, he wasn't there on a Sunday, it being the weekend. But I'm sure my father would have had contact with him in the working week, but probably not at the weekend. But I do remember we were shown around by somebody.
Mm. And when you say you came up, were you still living in the place where you were born?
Yes, in East Molesey. Mm.
Okay. Can you remember much about the journey?
Well, we must have gone up to Waterloo on the train. And I would have thought we must have gone on the underground. But, I mean, I was with my parents. They were doing the navigating. I just went along.
And was it something you remember talking to friends about at school the next day, or did it just come and go at that point?
I'm sure I must have spoken to my close friends about it. But... I think they missed out on an opportunity, because at that time, obviously, I could have said something really interesting about it, because it was so topical. But that didn't happen. And there was no reason for me to have been quiet about it, but they didn't pick up on it, which is a pity, really.
So you don't remember anybody else going either at the time?
Or... No, no.
And have you met people since?
I haven't ever met anybody else who went at that time, which is quite surprising. Makes me think I should ask my school friends.
Please do. Yeah, we'd love to hear from them. Okay, excuse me, I've got a very slight cold. So I think probably to round off, I've just got a couple more questions. One is something I've asked everybody really that I've been chatting with. If you were wanting to impart to somebody of a completely different generation to yourself, I don't know if it would be a great niece or whoever, the meaning of archaeology and history for you and why you feel it's important, what would you say?
It's, I think it's so important to try and build that link with the past so that we have a better understanding of where we've come from and what generations and sometimes many, many generations before us have achieved. So we may have the privilege of living now in at a time when there's high technology and many achievements like that. But there were tremendous achievements thousands of years ago. And I think it's quite sobering and instructive and helpful to think how people were able to construct amazing buildings 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, without the aid of all the technology that we have these days, but from sheer skill and endeavor. And so, going back that time, these were not primitive people. These were people with high levels of skill in various areas and have formed basically where we are today and are an important link with our past. We are linked to those people and it's good to see where we've come from and sometimes to be humbled by what they have achieved and what we haven't. So I think that would be my message.
Well, sounds lovely. Yeah, thank you. And finally, do you have that oil lamp handy?
I do.
Is it possible to have a little look at
it? Oh, yes.
And then I might take another picture, actually, with you.
With me holding my trophy.
Yeah, why not? So tiny.
I know. It's not surprising you didn't want it.
Golly. So is this terracotta?
Yes. Well, that's
so what they must have brought it from Italy then.
They probably, they must have done, mustn't they? Because they wouldn't have found the clay here, would they?
No.
And then presumably they filled it here and the wicks were there.
Yes, well, that makes sense.
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
I think so.
And yeah. I don't know what that is. I mean, whether it's a. It's hard in. Well,
it's. You wouldn't hold it there, would you? Because it's too.
No, well, it's sort of almost like a lion or something, isn't it? But, no, well, I don't know what it is.
Maybe it's just, just like you say, a little decoration.
Yes.
Golly, isn't that gorgeous? Well, let's have a little photo. Is there anything else you would like to add? Anything that we haven't covered?
No. I can't think of anything else that I haven't said about that.
Okay. Yeah, that's perfect. Well, thank you very much.